What's up, race fans? You have just entered the right place to talk about everything racing and go for another ride on the In the Groove podcast with your host, Slammin' Sam Smith.
Ladies and gentlemen, sit back, strap in, don't go anywhere.
Everybody back in the studio again for another night of In the Groove podcast. I hope you guys are enjoying the guests that we are bringing on for you and your entertainment of this In the Groove podcast. All right, everybody, as the race season continues to wind down, we still want to bring you the awesomeness of just being able to talk racing, especially in this funny year of 2020 where we really don't know how it's going to end, what's going to happen. But one thing that we know that brings us all together is racing. I've got another friend of mine here on tonight who you guys got to listen to, and bringing him on, I got to say this first and foremost, his podcast right now has the highest rating listens and likes. So I want to stroke his ego, putting the star back where the star needs to be. That is my friend, Isaac Sundrill. How's it going tonight?
It's going good, man. It feels good to be first to something. I made it to the top.
Hey, you know, all I got to say is doing this, maybe, you know, you being number one may help that car get sewn a little faster. Who knows? I mean, you know, new price, new week is your attitude. So who knows what's going to happen, right?
It's getting closer and closer to coming to your shop.
We'll see about that. Who knows? Like I said, you know, the Slam and Sam might scare a few people off that race with me. But Isaac, I don't know. We've got another guest on here tonight that is, you know, no name needs to be said. No name needs to be thrown out when we're talking about this guy. I mean, he's made a name for himself. The family line that runs in the racing community runs deep in that name. How would you, if you had the opportunity to announce for this person, to tell the world who this person is, how would Isaac Sundrill do it?
He's the legendary voice, Lindsay Lawson, man. And I tell you what, he always has this running joke that he has a face for radio. But goddamn, he's a good dude. Excellent historian of the racing, excellent voice. I still to this day think he's one of the best announcer, play-by-play, whatever you, when he's in the booth, shit's going to be good. So no introduction needed for the legend, man.
So there you go. Now we are bringing on, we're bringing on our friend Lindsay Lawson. How's it going tonight in Lawson Studios?
Oh, it's all great. I didn't know I had a studio, but that's a pretty cool addition, I guess.
Yeah, I mean,
about that.
Hey, you know, you just got to make it what it is. You know, no one's going to judge. Like I said before, this is a no judge area. Anything that is said tonight can't be used against you. I don't care what they say. So, I mean, you might make some friends, you might lose some friends, but guess what? You're in that groove and that's all that matters.
Well, I better be careful. I don't have a lot of friends to lose anymore.
Oh, no, that's fine. But Lindsay, for the people that don't know much about you, that kind of don't know your story, if you want to tell some of it, or I can play the clip that we have of you. I mean, either way you want to go about it.
Yeah, you know, we'll just, you know, talk about it. I'm sure it sounds exactly the same, you know, as I grew up in a racing family with my dad being one of the original members of the club. He wasn't at the first meeting technically, but he had to work, of course. So he was at the second meeting when the race club was formed back in the 50s. And then, of course, I grew up going to the racetrack as a kid. And it was into, I think I was about 1980, 1981, when my brother decided he'd been down in the pits. But that was back in the day when you couldn't go down the pits till I think you were 16 years old. So my brother got into racing. And of course, by that time, I was old enough and jumped right in with him as being the pit man. And for years, we raced in all kinds of divisions with my brother, Kevin. And then my nephew Dusty took up the wheel, hobby stocks. And then, of course, that segued into sprint cars, which they're still racing today. When my brother Kevin decided it was time for him to hang up the modified thing, he'd got to the point where a lot of people do, where you're putting in the time and the investment, and there's just nothing you can do to be on the top of the heap. And so it was kind of taking the fun out of it. He said he was done racing. My old pal Larry McFall gave me an opportunity to be an announcer and help him out in the booth. His current announcing partner had decided to step aside. A couple months after I agreed to take the announcer spot, my brother called me and said, "Hey, we're going sprint car racing." I said, "I already made a commitment to be the announcer." He said, "That's okay. We don't race in Minot that much, so maybe you can still do both." So, and away that went, and then on to the board of directors as vice president for several years, and continuing the announcing, and then wanting to get back involved in the pits and back into. In being around the cars and working on cars and being around that side of it again. And that's when I went down the pits, and when Isaac and his uncle Troy were still racing, went down and asked if I could help out. And they, you know, of course they said, sure. We raced with his uncle Troy for many, many years in the pits and in the modifieds with my brother. And of course knew Isaac from the time he was a young kid. And shortly after I came down there, Troy decided that his time had come where he was going to step away. So, I just asked Isaac if it would be okay if I kept coming down and helping him out. And here we are. It must be 5 years down the road by now, or pretty close anyway. And we're having a lot of fun and some success and a few laughs going up and down the highway.
Yeah, and exactly. I mean, after saying that, I don't even have to play the video. It seemed like you said that play by play, word for word. But it's cool to see, and that's something that I know Isaac and I have talked about, even my other co-host that's on here with me, Chris Ruhr, a.k.a. Fluff, you know, that we've talked about having people that have the knowledge and the know-how and being around being around, you know, Minot Racing, North Dakota Racing, and seeing the involvement with families and traditions. It's really cool to have that, but then to have someone that knows that history, that was embedded into that history and the continued lifelong racing of the Lawsons. You know, like I said, Dusty and Kevin, we sell a few parts to them and help them out with their now wingless cars instead of their, you know, wing cars. So it's cool to see that we have people that have been around, you know, for the long haul, pretty much, instead of the guys that race for a year, 2 years. So I know I'm going to open this one up to Isaac, because, you know, I know you guys get to talk in the race trailer and, you know, on the road and different things like that. But is there any questions, Isaac, that you may have for Lindsay that you haven't asked before, or, you know, any topics that you want to bring up?
Lindsay, is there anything we haven't covered in the thousands of miles now that we put on?
Well, there's some things that you and I haven't talked about because we probably don't want to talk about them.
Yeah, we just let those, they don't need to be brought up, right?
Well, yeah, anything that has to do with racing, yeah, we've covered it. We've covered it. Here's something that I probably hadn't mentioned before in a previous interview that some people know and some people don't. Is I moved down to Bismarck in 1993, took a job down there in sales, and lived down in Bismarck for about 8 years. And of course, my best friends down there and the connections I had down there were racing people. Well, Ivan Saylor and his crew down there, Racer Performance Center. At that time, Ivan was running both the Dakota Speedway in Mandan, and also the old Bismarck, well, I shouldn't say old Bismarck, the Bismarck racetrack over on the Bismarck Fairgrounds. Well, I knew Ivan from years and years ago when my brother and I raced hobby stocks against him. He was one of those guys, and still is to this day, that offered to open up his shop. We had a doubleheader that we were racing down there. We needed to, you know, do some work on the car and some regular maintenance, and he opened up his two-stall shop to us. We went over to his place, did some work on the car, got to know him, and that goes back 35 years ago, probably. So anyway, I spent a lot of time with Ivan, and he and I, once I moved down there, I was with him. I would go down and hang out at his shop and do anything I could to help him and help him, you know, with the racing, both in Mandan and in Bismarck. And I, he and I went around those racetracks for thousands and thousands of laps. I was the right-hand man for track prep and water truck and packing, and he was always the blade man, and I kind of filled in and did everything else. And that was an interesting education to kind of see, you know, how racetracks, you know, react in different, you know, and that's something everybody chases, the weather, the wind, moisture, that you get in the track. There's a lot of cool stuff to learn about that, that I was able to learn by actually, you know, doing it for several years and helping him to prepare and to promote those tracks down there. That's something when I was down there with him, and Isaac's the kind of guy too, is, you know, you're always, you know, as you know, if you're on racetracks, and he was kind of, like I say, in charge of running those racetracks as a, I think he ran the Bismarck track for sure as a promoter. But you're short on volunteers. I did everything, seriously, everything except make hot dogs in the concession stand. I was the flag man one night. I drove the pace car several nights. I would jump in the water truck, make laps in the water truck, corner judge. Yeah, you name it. But that's kind of, you know, how racing used to be. Everybody was able to do everything and to pitch in. It was a lot of fun and to be down and be a part of it, you know, with a great guy like him who's still dedicated, you know, to racing and involved deeply in the legends and having them, bringing them into our area.
So yeah. And Sam, if you've ever been down to Bismarck and take expressway there on the east, where it kind of makes that big corner by the Game and Fish, big headquarters now, just east of there is where the old racetrack used to be. That was like 8 or 9, 10 when they closed the place down. And then, so Ivan did that. So they were kind of going back and forth between both racetracks and what ended up happening. So what Bismarck ended up being like Wednesdays or Thursdays, right?
Yeah.
And Mandan would go Fridays and then Nodak Sundays. And then, like you said, with the volunteers thing, that like people just kind of quit going back and forth. So then Mandan and Nodak tried racing the same night for a while. That didn't go over very well, if I remember right.
No, and you're right. That didn't. Yeah, so there was a history of that. Like I say, that in that era, and things are different, you know, in different, you know, you can take a chunk of time, whether you call it a decade or era. The guys from Mandan would not drive 5 miles to race in Bismarck. There was only a small percentage that would support each track. And you know, at the end of the day, it ended up hurting both of them until it just wasn't feasible to run that Bismarck track anymore.
This might be one story from Bismarck that might be one of the better stories. There's a lot of good Bismarck race car drivers, but Lindsay, were you there the night that Rick Aucoin showed up?
Oh, yes.
I think that's the story that needs to be told, because then into the Rough Rider, that's kind of an epic one-off story of Rick Aucoin. So,
yeah, we were down. I think you're exactly right. If it was a Wednesday night race, maybe.
Yeah.
And it was just the regular, you know, regular local races that would show up. And all of a sudden, here comes this open trailer and this black car with the number 12. That's all, you know, coincidentally, the number 12. And the 12 on the door, and it was brand new tin, brand new car, very unassuming. And this car rolls in and was like, you know, I'm looking around, I'm talking to Ivan, and go like, who the heck is that? He goes, I don't know. We wander over there and there's Rick Aucoin. I mean, this is when he was, you know, in the middle of
being on
in the Midwest, based out of Kansas, I think at that time. Successful in late models and modifieds and the whole deal. And sure enough, Rick Aucoin comes strolling out and they go, well, hey, what's going on? You know, like, you know, we're just going to shake this car down a little bit and, you know, see if we can figure this modified deal out. And he came out there on that. It was one of those. It was one of those aha moments for me watching modified racing. He went out there, and it was the same story in the heat race, but especially in the feature, obviously with the extra laps. And he lapped the field. I mean, literally lapped the field. And these aren't no slouches. I mean, they were racing back there. These are real competitive racers that, you know, won, you know, track championships. And he went out there and just absolutely looked like he was, you know, driving a jet fighter. Compared to guys driving on the track. And the thing that in those days, of course, I was in the infield being one of the guys helping with the track. And I walked down and stood next to the guardrail on corner entrance in turn number 3. and everybody else. And I think Leo Burkhartsmeyer was racing that night. And there were some guys, like I say, good racers. And those guys were just screaming RPM all the way down into the corners and sideways. And Auckland was letting off just past the entrance to the pit area in the back, which is maybe halfway, two-thirds of the way down the straightaway. And he's letting off, coasting down into the corner, slowly picking up the throttle and just gapping these guys. And these guys, like I say, are just screaming the RPM, burning the tires off these things, and he's just absolutely gone. And that was one of those moments like, oh, okay, whatever, you know, you don't have to have this great big motor. You don't have to have all that RPM. But he was hooking up whatever they had going on in that car at that time.
That was one of the first four-bar suspensions to show up in North Dakota.
I think you're, yep, that's why. Yeah, I forgot that piece of the puzzle. You're right. But that thing, like we see some cars today, hooked up every RPM of that motor, went right to the tire, right to the track, and moved that thing forward. It was amazing. I'd never seen anything like it.
Yeah, so then, Sam, the Rough Riders Thursday, Friday, Saturday at Nodak, 10,000 to win, whatever it was, huge modified show, mods from all over the country. Auckland wins the qualifier Thursday night, flies out to South Carolina to race his late model again Friday, comes back Saturday to run the $10,000 mod show, goes into corner one and two, parks it, totals the car.
That you know...
Wasn't that the initial start?
Yeah.
Was that the drop of the green flag?
From what I remember.
And he was on the front row and overdrove it and parked it and destroyed the car and a handful of other guys. And that was the end of that.
That whole parked it thing is really becoming a real real theme here on In the Groove podcast. I know I'm going to get in trouble for bringing this up again, but I don't know, Lindsay, if you saw the pictures of good old number 14H Reed Hansen parking it on the highway while he's driving his car to go get the new body put on it. But I mean,
the term park it has several definitions. You could park it in the ditch. You can park it in front of the field. And best of all, of course, you could park it in Victory Lane.
So which one, I mean, we all should know, but I mean, these guys seem like they're parking at different places. Someone else that I plan to have it on, hopefully, is Justin Smalls-Mettler. He likes to park it sometimes, too. So, I mean, hopefully these guys just start parking it in Victory Lane instead of parking it everywhere else. Mad Bro Motorsports, located North Hill, Minot, North Dakota, the leading performance and parts store. If there's anything you need for your hot rod, give Slammin' Sam and the gang a call. 701-720-7996. Again, that is Mad Bro Motorsports. 701-720-7996.
On the way to being free.
So one question I've got for you guys here, and I know, Isaac, we've talked about this before, is just what do you see happening and going on with the generations of racers, like you said, generations of volunteers? Has that changed much for you, Lindsay, seeing it over the years, or do you think that it's going to continue to grow? We're kind of slacking in that area. I mean, like I said, you have a lot of history in this, and so I just kind of want to dive right into it and just kind of figure it out. So over the years, what have you seen? What do you think we can improve on? Just lay it on us.
It kind of ebbs and flows at certain times, and knowing the people who are actively involved in running our home track, the Nodak Speedway, you know, Brandon Beter's been heading that up as the president of the track for quite a long time and doing a great job. But I know that in just recent years, he's tried to do everything, and it was to the point where he didn't enjoy going to the racetrack. And that's certainly something that you don't want ever happen with something that, you know, your hobby that you love and you enjoy. And I was concerned that, of course with anybody, and especially with Brandon, when he shows up, he's got his family. Like when I was on the board, my entire family, from my mom and my dad and everybody that had my sister-in-law that had a spare minute was either in the pit trailer, in the concession or in the, souvenir trailer, volunteering in the back gate, the front gate, whatever it took. And Brandon and his family and extended family have certainly been instrumental in keeping things running and and being successful at Nonak. And I was, you say he was taking on too much. As you mentioned, Fluffy, him coming on and the people that are with him working the track, taking a lot of that time commitment off Brandon and his people. And those guys are doing a great job with the track prep. But it is a lot of time. It's a lot of time, and time is important to people. That becomes more and more important. A lot of times people would rather pay for it to have somebody else do it. And so that's where, yeah, it's tough with the, like I say, the volunteer thing. It's a hard thing to do. And you have to be of the type of personality that you can't be a volunteer and expect somebody to pat you on your back as your reward. You've got to be able to have that inside you already. You've got to be able to take the satisfaction that know that you're committing your time to helping whatever sport, in this case, racing, obviously, that you love. And it's got to be something that you feel yourself, regardless if anybody says thanks, that's icing on the cake when people tell you you're doing a great job. And that's the hard part. Like I say, even in recent years, we've gone through an ebb and a flow and the highs and the lows of having enough people and not enough people to do that. And that's being, a person who was on the board of directors and dealt with a lot of volunteers and stuff. That's a hard thing to get people to commit to day after day, week after week, to put in that time. Like I say, it takes a special kind of person, and it's certainly, those people are I don't know if they're underappreciated, but there's not enough appreciation to go around.
So with that, then you come into, I guess, the racing of today. Like you said, you've seen the flow of how everything has gone since 1981. 10 years announcing, 4 years of the Dakota Mod Tour, and that's something definitely that we want to talk about, especially with Isaac thinking that he's going to sell his car and, get into a modified. So kind of interesting to see how that goes. But then, like you said, you've never really gotten that chance to get into the driver's seat. Is that something that, and I hate to say this, but you lived through Isaac and doing that, and your brother and your nephew. Is that something that you would still like, that passion and that desire to do, is to get back into a race car? Or is it just one of those things where you're taking it by the horn, and if the chance arises, you may do it?
At this point in my life and racing career, I don't think, speaking of commitment, I don't think I have that additional 40-hour a week commitment to be in the garage. Number one, I don't have a garage that I could call a race shop. I don't think I have that desire that strongly anymore. I think it'd still be fun to maybe jump in one of those wingless sprint cars. Last year they had that kind of an open practice session down in Devil's Lake that Miles had put together, where you could come down and jump in a car, make 10 laps, something like that, just kind of as a hobby, and just to say that it's something I've done. But yeah, racing is a lot more than the 20, 25 minutes you get on the racetrack on the weekend. Anybody who's raced, you guys have both raced, that it's more than that. And that's one of those things that you've got to enjoy the journey. You've got to enjoy the shop time. It's obviously something you don't want to be fixing your car and putting a new body on it every week, but that time in the shop is something that a person kind of has to enjoy in the preparation for the racing. But yeah, for me, I don't think I think that ship has sailed, quite honestly. I can say I grew up, supporting my brother and my nephew, and their success was my success. And that doesn't change. Racing with Isaac, let me say this before, there's something I thought about before when we talked about doing this, and I've got to say this before I forget, because it certainly warrants something being said. If you've noticed any time that Isaac talks about his racing career and about, the people or any kind of success that he's had, and all the time I've known him, all the time I've ever known him, I've never heard him say I or me. Unless he's made a mistake, he'll take it. He takes credit for his mistakes, and those are going to happen in racing. But that's one of the greatest things about him, and that's what I enjoy being around him and helping him out, is because it's always we, and it's always about the team. And he never singles himself out. He knows that it takes everybody from Grandma Barb to his mom to his sisters, to the sponsors, to everybody, you know, to his wife, Emily, to everybody all the way down the list. And that's one thing that I think that's reflected in the amount of people that want to help you out, Isaac, and are there to support you. And that's genuinely how you are. I mean, it's certainly not an act or something that you're putting on for that purpose, but you genuinely go into it as you're the part of the team. You're the quarterback. You're the center. You're the guy. But if you were out there by yourself, it certainly wouldn't be as successful or as much fun, quite honestly.
So you're saying
he needs a village to make me look good. So I need a lot of people on my team. So that's why I got to give him a lot of credit because I need the help. You know, and when you were talking about the hours in the shop, I don't know. It's like 40 hours in the shop is no problem. But Lindsay's golf game is so good that I don't think he wants to wreck it spending it on the shop with me. Because I don't know if 40 hours on the golf course with Lindsay would help my golf game enough, though. So that's why he tells me to stay in the shop, and he'll show up on the weekends. And he's got the golf game down for us. So if we ever got a duo, he's got that covered. But, no, I appreciate Lindsay. And that's why it's fun having you on the team because you get that aspect of things, too. It's a we thing, not a me thing. That's just how it is. That's you know, it's a lot of fun. But you maybe should fix my golf game because it's getting worse as I get older. So, but no, it's all good. Yeah, it's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun too. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I tell you what, if
you ever want to drive the car, though, Lindsay, you can do it once. And you know what? Maybe we'll do 10 laps. You and Slam and Sam, if you have the fastest lap time, and then it'll be all good.
Oh, yeah, the Slam and Sam against the Lindsay Lawson. Yes, I like that.
Sell tickets.
I like
no,
that.
We need two sport compacts. We need two sport compacts. We'll go Slam and Sam. This is my idea, Sam. This is in your promoter notebook. This is what I want to see. Yeah. Every week.
Now we're going.
Out of a hat at Nodak.
Now we're going downhill. We're going downhill.
I want 10 guys in a sport compact. And you draw out of a hat, and it could be me and Smalls and Hellebust and Lindsay Lawson and Larry McFall and Eric Lonschlager. The fans would come in groves to watch us wreck those four compacts. It'd be like the Days of Thunder scene, man. Yeah. That's what we need to do.
You know, I went from a stock car with Chris. Then he put me down to a enduro car. And now I'm getting told the only thing I can drive is a sport compact. We're going the wrong way here. We should be moving up late model sprint car by this time. Nope. We are going the wrong way. See, and now Lindsay, I got to ask you, Lindsay, with the name Slam and Sam, I get so much crap from Chris and Isaac. Oh, I've already picked my number. It's the 8 machine of Slamming Sam Smith. They say because of slamming in my name, that no one's going to ever want to line up next to me because they think I'm going to wreck their stuff because I was a drag racer. What? I mean...
No, I think they don't understand, though, Sam, you probably don't know that I know this, but the Slammin' Sam is a nickname that you got when you were a kid when you get mad and you'd slam the door in your bedroom when you're mad at people. So it really has nothing to do with racing at all. It's just that you kind of had a temper when you were a kid and they gave you that name, Slammin' Sam. You didn't get dessert or something, so I don't know. So it's really not that intimidating.
Yep. Oh, wow. Ouch. Hey, we were going good there. Did you see that turn, Isaac, right there? Oh, it was going good, and then just boom.
Nope. He's got to figure it out. He's got the podcast. The flow is going now. We're a half hour into Sirius. Now it's fun time. Now it's going to be off the rails again.
Oh, man, I don't know.
Let me segue back a minute here, Isaac. Honestly, I've thought about it a lot of times, and especially this past summer, is I wish that your race shop was a little bit closer. I mean, if it were across town, you know, the last time I drove down and helped you out at the shop, I hit a deer on the way home.
That's right.
So I'm a little, it was 10:30 at night, and I'm driving just about into Minot, and the deer jumps out in front of me, and I wrecked my car, actually. So it's like, I'm a little reluctant to drive just in the middle of the week.
My schedule at the shop is so dumb. Some days it's 4 o'clock to 8. Some nights it's 10 to 1 o'clock in the morning. So it's hard to say, come down and then be at the farm till midnight. So it's,
That's the other part. Yeah. I can say I missed that. I missed some of that stuff and enjoyed. Well, back in when we first got together, we were with the first, putting the first car together. We stood there that one, what was it? An afternoon into an evening. and just looked at things and just kind of started rethinking things and got that front end so that it was something that worked, you know, that felt good. And
April 8th, 2017. I have it. We spent the whole day. And that's kind of when we started turning the corner with that thing. And that's when we kind of started winning races and stuff. And
there was a lot of time where we stood there and just looked at the car and said, what do you think? What if we, there was no, it was not, wasn't, there was very little science. There was no measuring. It was, we were talking about Grandpa Harry and how he used to do things. It's like, he can tell you how much camber and caster was in a car by standing back and looking at it. You know, he wouldn't get out the fancy gauge and put that on there and say, we got it exactly at 5.5 or 4.5. No, he would just go close one eye and I think she's good.
Lindsay, my boy, it looks good.
That's exactly right.
So with that, Lindsay, you know, I'm scrolling through the good old Facebook right here right now, and there is a couple of sport compacts for sale for pretty cheap. So maybe we might have to call Brandon Beater, get him on here, and see what he thinks about that. Maybe do an all-star race, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, perfect.
What weekend? I mean, we would have to do that. It'd have to be like the best of five or something. Points average.
How many sport compacts can we get for my car? How many? If we trade my sport mod straight up, how many sport compacts can we get for it?
Well,
five, four, four or five?
We can get four of them right now.
For sure. Like, I mean, at this point, it might be the best deal I can get.
So how do you feel about that, Lindsay, with Isaac being, you know, in the sport compact? I mean, not sport. See, look, now you got me saying sport compact, sport mod class for so long, and now wanting to change and make that leap going up to the mod class. How do you feel about that? Are you excited for the change? Are you ready for it? Is this taking you back?
You know, this is, and he and I talked about this a long time back. That's kind of the natural progression of things, is that, and that's, and my belief is that when the sport mod class was first introduced as the into IMCA, it was a stepping stone. And of course, things change as time goes on. And now the sport mod division is so competitive and the speeds are real similar to running the A mods that a lot of guys have found a home there, which is fine. But that was never, as far as I've known Isaac as a race car driver, that was never his intention. I guess we could throw this question to Isaac, but I'm pretty sure I know the answer. If they had a track that consistently ran or had a significant amount of nights that ran late models, I think that would be the next step on the horizon also. Isaac had the chance to race a late model on a couple of occasions for a friend of his and kind of got a taste for that big motor, big tire, big brakes kind of a feel. And as you related to me, Isaac, you really got a kick out of the horsepower of the tire, the feel of that. But you know, you can't just step into that, you know, you can't jump into that off the boat either. And unfortunately, a lot of these things, some of these things are just cost prohibitive to be competitive. And that's a real concern too.
Yeah. The big budget, you know, of all the big tire, the big motor, that big budget for late model racing too. And it's really, the guys that are good at that have been doing it a long time. I'm wearing my Aaron Turmo shirt tonight. This guy is back section more, which I think that is cool as hell. That Aaron Turmo won that fights back to back, man. That is, I mean, he's not local, Nodak, whatever, but I mean, he's pretty much, you know, kind of one of those guys you watch as he came through his career. That's pretty cool that he went out there and got that twice. But
yeah,
the late model thing, we didn't have to drive to Grand Forks every weekend. I think that'd be something a guy could do. I mean, you're good buddies with Tom Cochran and those guys. You can put a competitive car together. It's just as much time, you know, as anything, you know, as this mod game is going to be for us. And, you know, Lindsay grew up the hard way like we did at the racetrack, and we will never have the checkbook to do it, but, you know, we're going to have the time invested in whatever class we end up in. And so I do the late model thing again. I'd like to be in a little bit different ride situation where I can spend some more time in the shop with it as well. And yeah, they're cool. There's nothing. I love late models. I love the 410 sprint cars. I love all that shit. There's not very many things I turn down. So, but this is where, him growing up around mods and me growing up mods, this is kind of the step that I think is going to be really exciting for both of us. And, you know, for him, it's going to be a more, you know, he's going to hit mentally dive in, and he's got to learn a lot more stuff now for the setup game than we have in the past. We both do, and that's going to be fun and exciting, and we get to bounce more ideas off each other, so that's kind of cool. So, yeah, it's going to be good for both of us, I think. It's going to be more – I'm excited for 2021, I know that.
So. Yeah, and I guess I didn't exactly answer your questions, Sam, but, yeah, I'm excited to take a shot at these mods. I know that there's guys in there that have been racing – there's guys that are racing mods as long as you've been alive, Isaac. So that you'll be competing against. And there's guys, you know, good friend Sean Strand has, what, 15, 16 track championships?
Yeah.
You know, and we'll roll out on the racetrack with competition of that level. I mean, with the guys around here, with Hellebust and Hagen and all those guys. I mean, yeah, you're just not going to show up and go out there and show them how it's done. I mean, these guys have the time and it takes time. Everything takes time to get proficient at it. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be, looking forward to it for sure.
All right, everybody, we've all been in the shop and we have those tools that we just don't like to use. Well, if you go to powerbuilt.com, use product code MADBRO15 at checkout, you'll save 15%. It's easy. I'm talking high quality and durable tools. Guaranteed for life. You break them, it breaks, something happens, you send it back, they ask no questions. Proven performance in the industry. I'm talking even guys like Alex Laughlin, NHRA driver. Caruso family, pro mod driver. They're using these tools, so why can't you? Again, that is powerbuilt.com. Use product code MADBRO15. Save 15% at checkout. So again, thanks to Power Build Tools for coming on board with us. Don't forget, guys and girls, if you have not done already, please go over to Power Build Tools, check them out, use product code MADBRO15, that's your favorite guy, MADBRO15, and you can save 15% on checkout, especially for all those stocking stuffers that you guys have coming up, because yes, unfortunately, Christmas is right around the corner. But Isaac and Lindsey Lawson here. So Lindsey, you know, you've got the 20L connection with your family and, you know, your brother driving, your nephew driving. Talk about the next, I guess, topic that I really like to talk about is that tradition that you see down at the racetrack. Isaac brought it up, you know, and someone said it to him. I'm going to quote what Chris Ruhr said, is that people are going to throw tools and parts out to help Isaac because of things like you also said, you know, it's about the team. It's not about himself. Because he's a driver that cares about his team and the other people around him. He's not a dirty driver. He's not one of those drivers that are going to purposely wreck you or anything. But seeing, you know, his family and helping out his family, his grandfather and his uncle, and now you helping him out and seeing that, do you think that traditional trait is going to continue in the racing community we have right now, like the Beater family? You know, they're all embedded in it. You spoke about that. Are you seeing that transition from people, you know, it's just a dad or a son racing, or do you think that will continue, or is that starting to die?
No, I think it continues on, and I think you see it across the country where this next generation of kids, we see it in NASCAR. You know, Dave Blaney's kid, is Ryan Blaney, is out there on the biggest stage on NASCAR, racing for NASCAR and stuff. So, you know, once you grow up around it as a kid, it really, as Isaac, you know, he can attest, you know, with his Uncle Troy racing and him being with him, you around it. And then, you know, at a young age, you start going, you think, I want to be involved in this. And you know, and however our path leads, for me, the opportunity to do all the things I've done, with being in the pits with my brother all those years, and helping out and being on the board of directors and being an announcer. And one of the early thrills in my announcing career was we got to announce a race when the World of Outlaws first came to town, and we're in the announcer's booth with Johnny Gibson announcing our class of cars that are support class next to arguably the greatest dirt track announcer or announcer, racing announcer in the country.
Yeah.
You know, and for me to be sitting there next to him, and he was very gracious and you know, had nice things to say about the way we ran our program and the way that we were, you know, professional about the way we made our calls. I remember they sent me down one of those years. I had to go down on the starting grid and talk to the top four drivers in the lineup. I'm down there. That's probably one of the most nervous, the most nervous I've been, is you're standing down there with a microphone and you're talking to four drivers that are on the front row of the World of Outlaw A-Main. To me, not being a race car driver, that's like lining up side by side with the best of the best and racing with them. You know, coming from my perspective of being an announcer, that was like, boy, this is a little bit out of my league, quite honestly. But I was certainly glad that I got to experience that. And then moving on to doing the tour, and the tour was cool. But then when the tour exploded on live stream and people were able to watch that all over the country, to be able to do that, and that for me, that changed the way that, you know, that I, and I say, well, I and probably we called the races. Not only are you talking to the, you know, 1,000 or 1,500 or 2,000 people at a tour race in the grandstand, now all of a sudden your audience is much larger. And then the thing that I enjoyed about it is that, of course, at the racetrack, when they come out of turn number four and they're on the gas, 24 cars thundering down the front straightaway, I can scream as loud as I can and nobody's going to hear me. But when you're hooked up on that live stream, it's just like a broadcast, like we see on football or on NASCAR on TV. You hear the announcers over the sound of the cars. So now you have to make full sentences, and you have to make sense. And that also allows you to paint a little more clearer picture and a little more complete picture for the fans that maybe aren't there, that they can and give a little backstory when the opportunity allows to be able to. Like I say, announce the race and kind of from a different perspective and be a little more, I guess you can kind of fill the page a little bit more, which I found is a fun challenge and really enjoyed that.
Hey, this is for both of you, I've got to race with some cool guys, and I got a list of guys that I got to race with that you put your helmet on, take it off. That was pretty damn cool to race with Jeff Wildung or, those guys. That was cool, you know, what Brad's saying, but who are the coolest interviews that you guys have done? Like, I mean, Lindsay and Sam, you both have done a bunch of interviews on the track, off, whatever. Who is the coolest, you know, what's the one, maybe the most memorable or the coolest one that you guys have done?
Well, I was able to, like I say, I actually did an interview with Johnny Gibson. We were down in Fargo with my brother at the sprint at the Outlaw race, and I had my little battery-operated recorder, and I caught him and introduced myself and told him that we were going to be doing our races in Minot, you know, coming up. So I did an interview with him down in the pits at a different racetrack that we were able to play, talking about his background and stuff when they were first coming up here. And that was, like I say, at that point, being an announcer and looking up to the top of the heap of announcers to you know, talk to him and face to face. And then, of course, you know, even though Donnie Schatz is a local guy and we all know his family, still to be able to interview him, same thing, and capture that, you know, record that interview as at that time, multi-time World of Outlaw champion, best sprint car racer in the world, to chat with him a little bit. So a couple of those things were pretty cool.
Well, are you asking, like, when I'm doing Outlaw Performance or Mad Bro Motorsports, or are you just asking in general?
In general, anybody that you've got to do, any of your turn three and four, any podcast, anybody you got the chance to interview, even when you're back out west?
Well, this one's not racing related. I got the chance to talk to, I got the chance to talk to Pete Carroll when he was at USC. That's not, you know, race related. I was a huge USC fan growing up.
That's,
you know,
cool.
Reggie,
cool.
Yeah, Reggie Bush grew up with my brother. I grew up with Reggie Bush's younger brother. So playing football, unfortunately, my older brother and I didn't make it to play professional football or anything. My brother played a year of college football, and now I have a younger brother who plays for University of Wisconsin. So, you know, seeing them, that was cool. Tony Dungy, not racing related, I got to speak with him. So that was super cool. But then all my major stuff goes back to NHRA racing. Antron Brown, it's my homeboy. That's my homeboy. Love that guy to death. Erica Enders and her sister, actually, they're going to be, you know, the episode after you guys. I'm actually going to have both of them on the podcast.
Not near as good looking as us, but pretty cool.
Oh, you're a lie. I mean, like, see, yeah, I mean, those two, Jesus Christ. I mean, Texas women, I mean, doesn't get much better.
They're hard to look at. You know, Lindsay's an NHRA guy. He kind of keeps me in the loop. So
I'm actually a huge fan of Erica Anders. She's, I'm impressed. She's an impressive race car driver.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a big fan.
Yeah, huge fan. Me too. It's all right. Hey, I mean, if you want, I can sneak you in the interview and you can sit in the lobby next week and, you know, just admire the same thing I'm going to be drooling.
Just get us two posters signed.
I can do that. I can do that.
We're good at that.
Alex Laughlin, I've interviewed him. Great. The one that really got me, and I can honestly say this, and I just posted that video on our YouTube channel, but with Greg Anderson, I mean, that's just, it's just history. Like, you know, it's just, he's one of those guys that even standing there, and I had media credentials and everything, I could walk right into his trailer. But there's just something about it where it's like you look up to a guy like that and you've watched him for pretty much all the time I've been watching racing. So I stood there like, hey. And then his son finally was like, what's up? And I'm like, can I go talk to your dad? And he goes, yeah. He goes, you know, you don't have to ask. And I'm like, no, like, it's your dad we're talking about here. Like, yeah, I have to ask. So I think for me that honestly, you know, other than Tony Dungy, and I would say my top two have been Tony Dungy and Greg Anderson. I mean, that just, you know, football and racing, two things that, you know, I had really good passion about. So I would have to go, those two would be the best ones because they're just, it's history. It's a lot of history, and it's just that stuff that you want to know. Just like having Lindsay on, right? I mean, you talk back to 1981. Like, 1981, I mean, I was born in 1990.
We can take it back a lot further than that. I think probably my earliest memories is I was probably about 1965. I was sitting in the stands eating a bologna and cheese sandwich because my mom used to pack us lunch because concessions were way too expensive. And I know you grew up that way too, Isaac.
And they still are.
And that was how we made it, you know, racing. We'd pack sandwiches, she'd bring them in, and sitting in the old wooden grandstand at the fairgrounds and cheering for my dad. You know, it was, I've seen a lot of, like I said, I guess you got to live a long time, and which is a blessing. But sometimes you look back, it's like, really been that long? Yeah, it's really been that long.
All right, so here we go, Lindsay. I'm going to kind of put you on the hot spot here. We've done it to Isaac, but I kind of want to know everybody has their favorites in each class, and everybody doesn't have their favorites in each class. So what I'm going to call this one here is don't ever do that again and do that again. If you can pick anyone in the hobby stock class, like, who would you say, if you could pick a driver that should move up, that's in the hobby stock class over the last couple of years, and someone that you think should move up into the next class and figure, you know, start getting that figured out because they have a good range on their hobby?
You got to go along with the guys that are perennial champions, you know, Birch, you know, he's put it on him for a long time. And I think he'd make a great stock car driver. I think he did step up to the stock cars for a short period of time. And I don't think things went great, but just like we were talking about with anything, when you move classes, it's going to take a little bit of time. But, yeah, they've certainly got a handle on that. And like I say, there may be, that's certainly their division. But I think the talent is there. The championships are there. And I think that would allow them. Both the Birches, actually, have got enough talent from what I've seen anyway, that they could move up if they wanted to. But like I say, sometimes it's, sometimes there's other factors involved. And, but yeah, it's,
and now
when we get to the sports, I'm pretty sure my mic's going to cut out.
No.
Yeah, I'm just, there's a little, what's this icon over here in the corner? Yeah,
that mute button? No.
It says your mic is soon to cut out. Yeah, there was the video.
The video went off too. So who's your guy that maybe have stepped out of a hobby stock and went to a stock car that you were like, ooh, I don't know if you're ready for that. Maybe, you know, what were you thinking?
To be honest with you, Sam, I don't really keep that close of tabs on those classes. Unfortunately, the truth of it is that, and Isaac and I talk about this, I don't know when the last time is we watched the stock car race. I mean, those things are entertaining, especially, you know, with Mad Mike Hagan sliding back into the stock cars, you know, where, you know, for many years he cut his teeth and really making it exciting. But shoot, I don't think we saw him race twice, did we, all year?
No, I mean, between the hobbies and the stock cars, we're either getting ready or just getting out of the car. We never get to watch those guys. That's what's tough.
Yeah, we go the rare times we get to watch them when they switch up the order, which I enjoy that when they switch the order of things. Is I'll think, who's that in that car again? And he'll go, oh, that's so and so. It's like, oh, okay, because I haven't. You know, we're halfway through the season. I haven't even seen those guys race. But yeah, I don't know. There's there's some guys that you have to take that step. Nobody's going to jump up to the next level and stand on the top step right away. So. It takes a little bit of time there's a handful of guys in the sport mod class that have the talent, to move up to the next step if they wanted to. And like I say, sometimes the economics don't work. Here's one of the things, Sam, that Isaac and I have talked about is that one of the benefits of moving up to this, up to the A mods is the ability to now race in Mandan on Friday night. You know, we don't have a Friday night track that we can race at with a sport mod, and to drive all the way to Dickinson. Sometimes we get home back to Turtle Lake. I jump in with him in Turtle Lake. We get back at 1:32 in the morning. And then I drive home. Well, he doesn't have any time to do any maintenance on the car, although they do sometimes. They'll change gears at 2:00 in the morning. I drive home. I get home in the middle of the night. Try to get, things reassembled. I always try to go out and play around the golf on Sunday mornings and boom, we're at the racetrack. We're doing it again. So for us, it's going to be, it's actually a benefit where the potential is to race Friday night, work on the car Saturday, race Sunday in Minot. And the weeks that one or the other are off, we can pick a Saturday track going to Jamestown, going to Dickinson, going to Williston. We can, we have some real options, which is kind of a plus.
Isaac, I really think he's kind of avoiding the controversy that we want here tonight. Maybe we needed Chris Ruhr to jump on here to, kind of maybe stir the pot a little bit. But nope, since you said it, you guys don't get to watch this other class. I mean, you don't get to watch the other classes. So what about in the sport mods? Because there's a list that I could probably go down, but I'm going to keep it, I'm going to keep it pretty clean. But I know there's one guy that... I heard really could use some help over there with the 49 car. I don't know if you know anything about him, but it may stroke his ego that we're still talking about him. But who would you say is your most improved other than Isaac in the sport mod class over the year?
That's probably one of the guys that's coming up, and there's a couple of guys that have done real well. Isaac, I'm missing his name, the 3S, Schmidt.
Yeah, Logan came leaps and bounds this year, man. I'm very impressed with that kid. He drives hard and aggressive some nights, but he really learned how to dial back the aggressiveness and make 20 really good quality laps. I was impressed by the end of the season. Yeah. I think he's going to jump in. I think he hasn't won yet, but I think next year he's going to rattle a couple off. They're waiting for him now. He's going to be really good. More magic there. I followed him around the top, and I thought I was making some really good laps, and he was making the same laps I was. And I think him, me, Eric ran in the top four with Pavlicek from Fargo into the hell of a race. I mean, and they got Finn in 3 and 4, and the kid can do it. Bruce Redlin's nephew, and that's a tradition in racing. family there too, from Bruce's dad, Dwayne, to Eric's, Eric Logan's dad there. They got a lot of tradition there. That kid's going to, for most improved, there's no doubt that was it was Logan. Yeah, he did a really nice job.
And maybe even within that, somebody's not necessarily new to the racing or to sport mods, but I think the progression from beginning of the year to end, Darren Medler, for him to be able to pull off that win down at the Stampede, how cool is that? I mean, he had some real ups and downs throughout this past season. But
when Darren jumped in Justin's car at Motor Magic to race the A-Mod deal, I think he went third and fifth and then got wrecked on Sunday night or whatever. But Darren can drive too. There's to be politically correct about this, there's a dozen dudes in this sport mod class that can move up and it wouldn't blink an eye in the A-Mod class. That's why I think we feel pretty comfortable going up is the talent level in the sport mod class. It's not beginner shit, man. It's hard. So, that's why I was impressed with Logan to jump in with us. I got 7 years in, and I'm like one of the younger ones, in that sport mod class. So I was like 15 to 20, and it's like, holy cow. And now, Logan's on year three or whatever, and he can drive. So, there's 10 dudes. We could lift them off. There's 10 dudes that could go to the A-Mod class, and we'd have 20, 25 really, really impressive A-Mods at NODAC on a Sunday night.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting things that we've talked about is and Isaac pays attention a lot more than I do. He's my information source on lap times, and the difference in lap times between sport mods and modifieds often is very slight. And of course, part of that that contributes to that is that the track deteriorates, as the night goes on, from the time we race, the stock cars get out there, and then the mods. But the track slows down, of course, as the night goes on. But their lap times and their speeds are very, very similar to the sport mod division. So that's one of the things that, a person can have a little bit of comfort in is it's not like you're going from a hobby stock to a late model. The speeds and what your expectations of, the speed and the close competition is going to be real similar.
So like we're saying, there's a lot of heavy hitters in each class. There's a lot of improvement that could be made. But Lindsay, a question for you to kind of put Isaac on the chopping block here. Has there ever been one of those moments where he does something when you guys are out on the track or, he comes in and talks about it after heat racing or maybe the B main and he goes, hey, I'm going to try this. And you go, Isaac, what in the hell were you thinking there? And I see Isaac putting his hands over his head, so there must be one or two that he's already laughing about.
No, he probably knows about it, but honestly, that's the thing about, and I tell people about, it's how I kind of refer to it. And I wish we could, go to our endless notebook of information and say, well, here's what we should do, and we should move this 2 degrees and that one notch and that bar and that shock. Getting faster is all about checking off the big, big, long list of what not to do. And sometimes you got to take a big swing at things, not purposely to make things, the car worse or to make a mistake, but you got to take a swing at some things sometimes and go, and there's been times that we've been, what do you think if we do this? It's like, yeah, we're all in agreement. He goes out there. It's like, I've never driven a car that was plowing and was so tight in my entire life. Let's not do that again. But if the track were like this, I think that might be something that we could use. So it's never really really any of those situations. Like I say, there are times that, like I say, I'm not behind the wheel. So I always have to default to the final decision, of the driver and what the feel is of it. My perspective is how I see the car, the attitude, the profile of the car, and the relationship with the speed of the people around them and how quickly he can pick up the throttle in relation to the people around him. Sometimes in the car, you can't have that perspective of you're involved in, obviously your focus is a little tighter than, with my vantage point, sometimes down inside the pit area, outside on the outside of the track or whatever the case may be. But so it's a nice blend. There are some times that, when things don't go well in the racetrack, I've learned that you don't stand right next to the driver's window when he comes in, because you might get hit in the head with the steering wheel. So that's sometimes that's a learning experience. Don't take you once to figure that out.
So we should put a caution sticker right next to the window for Isaac for the next year's car? Stand back.
It's an emotional sport, Sam. Sometimes it gets the best of me.
Hey, I mean...
Lindsay... Okay, go ahead.
And that's why I have not purchased a car, and that's why my statement will stand. I will drive a car if someone has one that they want a driver for, you know, little maintenance. But I don't think I could do it. I like the name Slamming Sam and then someone slamming into the car that I've got to work on. That's why I stay on the other side of the fence, you know. You do a burnout, you stay in your lane, that guy stays in their lane. And if someone gets out of the lane, you know, it's not that much work. You put some polish on the car and then, you know, maybe you change one or two things, change some tire pressure. And I see Lindsay, he's like, yeah, you know, that might be better. Don't have to deal with all that dirt every weekend. You know, I mean, we're there for the weekend. We don't have to travel. You wouldn't have to worry about going home and hitting a deer and at midnight unless you were leaving, you know, wherever we were racing from. But I don't know. I told Isaac he's going to have to come over to, you know, the dark side and pit for me one weekend so he can just relax. I just want him to relax, take the stress off,
get a good nap
in between rounds. Exactly.
Now, you know, Lindsay's always been good about, he's never said you got to do this in the car, you got to do that in the car, and I've never said you got to do this, we got to do that in the car. We've always been really, you know, mutual on what we've been doing, and he's really good about making it my idea to try something. So that way I'll actually do it because I was really cautious. And then, you know, we started throwing some bigger changes. This thing got better. We learned a lot in 2019 of what not to do. Yep. Because we were trying to relate, you know, from a 2012 victory car to 2014 victory car, nothing related. Everything on this car that we did different to go forward this year was we would never have done on the old car.
Yeah.
It took a long time because we had some nice runs in 17 and 18 to throw that mindset out. Turn well in 2019, you know, and we were terrible. We weren't wearing each other out, you know, and we were just mentally because we wanted to freaking win, you know. And so, yeah. Like when it got to points where, and there's never been a huge blow up fight. There's been times we're sick of each other, but that's just spending a lot of time together, you know. And so that's always been good. And
we learned a lot. You know, Isaac grew up being an athlete and being competitive all the time, and me, you know, not having that kind of upbringing and stuff, but me being competitive at the racetrack and being the guy that, you know, was trying to outthink the racetrack and outthink the competition and try and figure out the next thing it's exhausting and defeating sometimes when you throw all your best ideas at it and the car just is the same or worse. And it's like, man, we've had some quiet drives home, not because we're just upset with the situation. You know, with all the time that Isaac puts in and then with all the thought and the, you know, what we think are great ideas and information that we get from other racers and yeah, it's just not paying off. It's just frustrating. Your mind just rolling, you know, all the way home. It's like, what can we do to make this car go forward? And finally, you said this year Isaac made some big changes, you know, had some ideas and bounced them off some people that, in racing that help him out and give him some feedback and right off the start, things started going our way. You know, I was thinking back, Isaac, that first night down in Dickinson, that was probably the perfect night of racing.
Yeah.
Because you draw when you come in the gate, you know, which is pretty rare that we start in the front and no one ever passed you all night. You started in front of the heat race and the car was perfect and it was a nice and easy drive and it won by many, many car lengths. And the same thing in the A main through the front row. And it was just, it's like, wow, this is going to be a great year. it was still a good year, but it didn't quite go as smooth as night one.
No, we were hot for like eight nights and then we struggled for like 12 and then we were good for the last 10. You know, it's kind of how this game goes though. Everybody gets faster in the middle of the year too. And what's been weird in the last year or two that maybe hurt us a little bit is the racetrack has been so fast, and that's not a bad thing. I don't hate that. It's just been, it's harder to make it up in the driver's seat when the racetrack's got a lot of traction. When the track's got a little bit slower, like in 17, we were in a drought in North Dakota, so a lot of racetracks were slow. Well, hell, we ran in the top five everywhere we went because it was a lot of technical stuff, and that kind of benefits our program better, probably benefits me a little bit more, where the racetracks got really fast in 19 and 20 with the better moisture and the better track prep or whatever, and so that maybe hurt us, you know, a little bit more. And that
It's hard to make up horsepower, no matter what we were trying to see. That probably frustrated us more than anything in this Sport Mod deal is the motor programs have gotten so good for some of these guys. I mean, it just got a ding. You know, it's hard to make up miles per hour and to carry that speed momentum. If you look back, like when we, you know, like when we won in 17, and I think we were at our average finish in Nodak in 2017 was fourth. But I bet the average speed was about 67, 66 miles an hour for the Sport Mods. Now our average speed is like 69, 70 miles an hour. You know, we picked up 3-4 miles an hour as a class. You know, so it's harder to make up any ground. And if you mess up or too tight or whatever, you're just out to lunch. So it's kind of crazy. I think, Lindsay, you probably saw this, Sam. I don't know if you – one of Donnie Schott's first crew chiefs, and Lindsay knows who he is, was yeah. Kenny Woodruff. He passed away this week at the age of 79. I think Kenny Woodruff is kind of the guy that Lindsay grew up around. Not Kenny Woodruff, but those guys – like my grandpa Harry was a little bit more gruff when I came to the racetrack, and those guys back then were just a little bit more gruff, you know. And so he can do, yeah, and I understand it. So he doesn't have to say anything. He can just kind of give me a look, or I just know when we effed up a setup or something. we don't have to say anything. I think that comes from that older yeah. era of those geniuses like those guys of, yeah, that. We're not to say a word. It was terrible. Or when it's really good, it's just like, not say a word then either. You know, it's like, yep. Oh shit, we found something here, you know? So,
yeah, one of the first questions I ask Isaac when we're out of town and leave the racetrack as we're heading out is like, what would you have done different if you had one more shot at making changes? And just to be able to, not that he hasn't thought it, but just for us to have a little exchange of ideas after the fact and say, yeah, we could have changed that shock, or we could have did this, or maybe we should have, you know, kind of hones in that setup for the next time you see a situation like that. I think there's value in kind of talking about that stuff and saying it out loud that it causes me to remember it better, you know, as we leave the track and go, what could we have done differently? And well, yeah, and Isaac, you're being kind of humble about the Kenny Woodruff situation. He traveled with Donnie Schatz for a few weeks in the summer when Kenny Woodruff was his crew chief. And Isaac, you were 11, 12?
Yeah, and you learned, this is what my Uncle Troy told me before I left. If Kenny Woodruff tells you to jump, you ask how high, because that's what his legendary sprint car status is. So I think that helps you respect the game a little bit when you're around those guys, because it's just, everything's second nature. The way they do everything is just so easy. They grew up in the dirt, you know, that's just kind of, you know, you can't beat history. You can't beat lap time. You can't beat track time.
So, I mean, you guys kind of ease right into my next question is what, so for you, Lindsay, you know, you've mentioned this golf game and you and I, unfortunately, you picked someone for the mod tour that, you know, he did end up winning it. You picked Elijah Zevenbird, and he won that. And then you said, the guys on the eastern side of the state were going to win in the mod class, and they end up doing that. And I picked someone from the western side. So unfortunately, we do have to play a round of golf. So I'm, you know, hopefully this winter I can step up my game a little bit. But you know, no one really talks about their golf game, right? But what is what's the perfect day for Lindsay on a Sunday morning? You know, you get your rest after a Saturday night of racing. So what's the perfect race day Sunday morning tradition? Are you one of those athletes or, you know, person that's based off of the superstition of doing stuff?
No, I know there's none of that at all. I don't, there was a time maybe that I thought that, you know, wearing the same, you know, the same uniform or, you know, doing something specifically the same was, it doesn't matter. There's so many factors and anything that I bring to the table is certainly not superstition or luck that causes any success. Things happen and regardless of the preparation. But yeah, for me, you know, it's, yeah, Sunday mornings, you get up, you play around the golf, come home and you know, kind of get prepared to go to the racetrack. And of course, you know, it's, you know, and like I say, I've been doing this a long time. Isaac's been at the racetrack his whole life too. And, it, you know, results are great. But we're, you know, if you only found satisfaction in racing when you won, then you wouldn't really have much fun at all, would you?
People make it better.
Yeah. It's all part of the process and being part of the, part of the struggle sometimes is sometimes satisfying.
Now, Lindsay, after a long day of golfing Sunday morning, have you ever come to the race? Have you ever taken a nap to where you would miss the races afterwards? I can't remember. Do you remember somebody that did that where they took a nap and missed the evening of racing?
That sounds familiar. That sounds like...
Does he park next to us?
Yeah, there's some people that... I think there's a guy named Reed did that, didn't he?
Yeah, I think it was Reed Hansen who took that nap and slept through the whole races, yeah.
Yeah, that's never happened to me. I don't, that's the strangest thing.
That's weird. I've never heard of anybody else doing it, so...
The thing is with Reed, though, maybe he may have ended up at Boots or something like that, you know. Then he likes that it's a triple beat drink. And once he gets into that, I mean, you know, there's no selling for anybody. But I do have a question here, and I hope you guys can see this. This picture right here. I pulled it up on the screen. So is there any explanation here for this picture, Lindsay, for the people that are going to watch the video? I mean, it looks sharp, but is this?
That's obvious. That's an optical illusion is what that is.
Oh, okay.
there was a little bit of a backstory to that.
There was a bet
that, yeah, we were talking about that, and I said, I found that suit online, and I showed Isaac. I said, hey, what do you think? What do you think we all get these and wear them to the banquet? He says, never going to happen. I will never catch me in a checkered suit. Like, come on, man. That's cool. He goes, no. He goes, I tell you what, I'll be okay with you wearing that suit if we win the championship. I said, all right, you're on. And, of course, then we ended up winning the championship. And I didn't know that checkered background was going to be there. I didn't know that was what they were going to use for the background for the trophy presentations. So it's just kind of all, you know, one of those things that kind of came together that won the championship in 2017. And then they had that checkered background, which I thought was pretty funny that I completely disappeared. It was like green screen.
It was a good bet to lose.
Yeah.
Especially is for you, Isaac, right? You're getting the championship. You guys made the bet. But I know, Isaac, there's some things for you. You're pretty superstitious about things. We talked about that in Out of Three and Four. You know, you said, hey, if I win tonight or if I Parker in the winner's circle, that we have to do that. So does that take away some things? Is there some things that it's like maybe you forget to check a tire pressure or, you know, you forget something at home? Because you're so focused on, hey, I've got to do X, Y, and Z every race night.
There's a couple of things. I don't know. I can never eat on race days. So I kind of, we always have snacks in our trailer, but I can never I can eat lunch, but I can't eat at the racetrack. Like you'll never see me at the Pit Burger stand. I can't do that. There's a couple of little things. They always make fun of me because I always check the bolts on my steering wheel before I roll out, and for whatever reason, and then the way that I put my gear on is always the same when I get in the car. That's always the same. And I guess it's actually Lindsay kind of one. We were leaving for Dickinson, and I was gonna run out the door, and I never said anything to Emily. He's like, "You never know. You better say goodbye to her." I was like, "You know what? You're right. I was being dumb and I was being a bad husband." So I always text. I always text my wife before the feature. I always text my wife before the feature. So that's the one thing I don't ever forget that, because you never know what's going to happen out there. You know, we have really good safety equipment and shit. That's probably the one that of all 224 nights that I've raced, Sam, I think that's the one that I've got down pat. So
you're counting on the count ticker, huh? 247.
At 224, I compiled all my. I'm a basketball coach. I'm a stats nerd. I'm a sports nerd. So I've always kept all my stats, wins, heat wins, top fives, feature, whatever. And so when we wrapped up the season or whatever, I compiled all of them from whenever the last 8 years has been here. So I was like 224 shows so far. So.
No, and I mean, I get it, right? I played football. I ran track. Yep. you know, and I ref hockey now. So I totally understand that whole mindset of you have to put things on a certain way. I'm going to make fun of myself here, and it happens in life. The last time that I switched up my routine, right, I always put on my right, like, it doesn't matter, my right sock. I have to put my right foot in my spandex first, like, all the way down to the skate shin pads. The eyelids on both skates have to go on the last loop. They have to go through the right eyelid first. I mean, it's just how it is in racing, everything. Right glove before the left glove. It's how it is. And the last time I didn't do that, I busted my ass on the ice. Fell, hit my head. I had to go to the sports trainer the next day and had to get cleared because this was on a Tuesday, mind you, right? High school game. I had to get cleared to do the Thursday game because Trinity sports medicine doctors were like, no, you have a concussion. I don't remember the whole second part of that game. Like, I can honestly say, I looked at my partner and said, Jake Stack, I looked at him and said, who tripped me? And he goes, bro, there was no one around you. And I'm like, no. But since that day,
were you a better ref before, after, you know, as a basketball coach, you know, refs and I get along just wonderfully. So were you a better ref after or before the concussion?
Who knows? I mean, you know, it just depends on which mood the coach is in that day, because some of them, you know, they're happy, they're go lucky. And then the other ones, you never know because they haven't eaten any food before, like you said. ALS Teca Mexican Food, located here in Minot, North Dakota, on the north side. If you want the best and authentic Mexican food located in Minot, North Dakota, please check out the gang up at ALS Teca Mexican Food, located right near the Minot International Airport. Go up there, try one of the burritos, and I guarantee you will not leave hungry. The best and authentic Mexican food here in Minot, North Dakota, again, that is ALS Teca, for all your dine-in and dine-out needs. So, Isaac, since you don't like food, one day maybe you'll come up to Minot and we'll all have to get together and go up to ALS Teca and get some lunch. I had that today for lunch. Cannot express to you guys enough that those tacos, man, something about those tacos. But, you know, wrapping it up here, like I always say, we've taken the green flag already. We've come around corner one and two. We're on that back stretch going into three and four. Lindsay, thanks again always for having, you know, giving us time here on Out of Three and Four and on In the Groove podcast. But Lindsay, if you can take a look back at a very stressful year, at a year that no one knew, and we still don't know what it's going to bring to us, what all we, you know, are going to face, what are your highs and your lows of the 2020 race season? What, you know, what was your favorite track? If you guys went to a different track or if you saw something new, like, you know, just give us kind of a brief overview and what your highs and lows taken out of this year were.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It was a strange year that no one had really expected, and how it was going to start and how things were, if we were even going to race. So the highs is, you know, that all of the racetracks in our area did a tremendous job on putting on a show and putting together good racetracks and good competition. That was certainly the high of it all. You know, there's always lows along the way. They don't last long. That's what I've learned after being around racing for a long time, is the lows in the sport. You don't have to worry about those too much. You know, there's you have to learn to deal with that. They come and they go. Probably to end up the season with Isaac winning the North Dakota State Championship in the sport mod division, which was completely not even in our sights at all at the beginning of the year. It just kind of started going that way with him being able to race. That none of the tracks are racing well. Generally, when he's doing spring work, we miss some races early, and then we kind of get behind the points with everybody else in the state. But so we all kind of started in the same time, and for him to put in the extra effort to race Fargo a couple of times, and then of course that big win out in Grand Forks at the end of the year. Those are certainly a couple of the highs, and to take home that state championship, like I say, with in a strange year like this, was kind of certainly a silver lining. And this being the last year that were going to run full time in the sport bond division. So that was pretty cool.
Is there anything, Isaac, that you can take out of that? Anything that you want to say to Lindsay?
No, I'm always giving my crew a lot of credit, and especially Lindsay. He puts a lot of miles on and up and down the road, and you know, late nights and early mornings, and it's always been appreciated, and it's been a lot of fun. I think when a guy looks back at a racing at the end of all, end of his career ever is, you know, I think we're gonna look back and say, God, that was those 5, 10, 15 years, whatever it ends up being, that was a hell of a lot of fun. And
yeah,
I kind of feel bad stealing him from the Mod Tour deal and out of the booth, because I think what he did in the booth is special. I think a lot of people love him up there. I think he needs to get back in there at some point. He might have to be back in there next year for the Mod Tour so we can afford to go on it. So, but no, Lindsay know how much we all appreciate it, and I think it's been a lot of fun. And I think in the world of North Dakota racing, Lindsay Lawson's name is going to be remembered for a long time. So,
yeah, and I mean, you know, like you said, from helping your brothers out, to helping, you know, your nephew, you're doing double duty some nights when Isaac's racing and your family members are racing, and maybe who knows, with a younger generation of the Lawsons growing up, maybe you might be helping out hopefully you'll be helping out a junior car here soon.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on. My nephew's boy just turned 8 over the weekend. So yeah, they've got him. If he were tall enough, they'd have him in a sprint car already.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to be, like I said, in a slingshot. So, I mean, that's definitely cool. And then your time here, you know, announcing and doing different things like that, that's greatly appreciated to continue to grow the sport and continue to do that. So, I mean, I think there's great things. And then who knows, Isaac's talking about maybe getting into a late model, so you may not be able to retire yet. I mean, we'll give him the mod for a couple of years, then we're going to make a move. But then I'm really looking forward to this race that Isaac's talking about he's going to put on. So if he can really make that work, maybe you and I, since we don't have the racing experience like all these other guys, you know, us media guys can start on the pole, and maybe we can, you know, show him how it's done. I got that hot foot out of the drag racing career. Yep. But
it'll be the Slammin' Sam Smith Sport Compact Spectacular. I can see it now.
Well, here's the thing you guys don't know is that I've driven front-wheel drive cars most of my adult life, so I got a huge advantage over your rear-wheel drive guys.
Yeah, that's something that I might have to get used to. I'm not going to lie. You know, that would take a little bit of getting used to. But, you know, if you don't pin it to win it, you know, if you're not smashing that loud pedal, if you're not driving fast and taking chances, then what's the point, right? That's why we always do it, because we are in that groove. So, Lindsay, like I said, coming out of 3 and 4, taking the checker flag. Thanks for your time, for coming on with us tonight. So, Isaac, you know, having someone who is in your pits and having, you know, a mentor like that, with someone with racing tradition, racing history, I mean, that's just definitely got to be cool, right? For me, that would be like I said, that would be like an Antron Brown, right? Or a Richard Freeman. I'm just going to say that name because of Erica and them. You know, having someone like that in my pits telling me what to do if I was in the car. So, I mean, that's got to be huge for you.
Yeah, it is. There's just a lot of history, and like, you can't, like the stories of the Rick Ocklands and Leo Burkhart's Meyer back to those days. There's something to learn from all of that, because no matter what changes in racing, you know, you're going in circles and you're trying to go as hard as you can. And so whatever you can pick from 20, 30 years ago or 20, 30 minutes ago, it's important to help you go forward. And it was nice to have all that history. I think, you know, like you and Fluffy are trying to make dirt track and race again, dirt track's great again. And they were trying to keep the history alive. We can help with that side of things. So it's pretty cool. And I think, you know, being on with him, it explains a lot of how we work and how he's, you know, his history level. And I think if we get to be back on again, Sam, I think the next guest I get to be on with, that might go a little bit. I don't know. We've been making racing great again and the history of racing great again. But the next two guests you want to have me on with, I don't know what we're going to make great there. So
Yeah, you know, like I said, sometimes you don't have to make things great, but that is something that you brought up that I also need to bring up. So thank you again. You're taking that checker flag, and it was always fun having you on, Isaac. But I do want to let everybody know, because of the success and everything that we're kind of doing over here, all of our guests will be rocking the Making Dirt Track Racing Great Again shirts next year. You'll see them in the pit. So anyone that ever does come on in the Groove Podcast that is one of our racers, we will have them rocking those shirts just to say that they were in the groove. So like always, guys, you know, we talk everything racing. If you guys ever want to check out any of our social medias, please do that. Please give us a thumbs up, like, share, and keep watching these. And like always, smash that loud pedal. This has been another episode of In the Groove Podcast, brought to you by Mabro Motorsports, LS Tech and Mexican Food, and the good folks over at Outlaw Performance ENT. If you haven't done already, please go over and check out all of our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, and on YouTube, all under outlawperformance.ent. Till next time, you guys keep smashing that loud pedal.